Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, October 12th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. And we will begin on the front page with a piece from the University of Illinois called Students Scrape Down White Nationalist Stickers, Hundreds Found on Poles, Signs Around Campus Over Weekend, by Julie Wirth. More than 200 stickers from a white nationalist organization were plastered on lampposts and signs around the University of Illinois campus last weekend. The stickers were from an organization called Patriot Front, considered a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League. According to photos shared with the News Gazette, there were at least 7 different stickers, one with an anti-immigrant message, and others promoting the group's view that European Americans conquered America and the country belongs to their descendants. The UI's facilities and services staff removed about 60 of the stickers from campus signs and lampposts Wednesday after administrators became aware of them, officials said. Campus policies restrict the posting of flyers, stickers, and other signs on authorized bulletin boards and kiosks. The majority were removed by a couple of students over the weekend who spent more than 5 hours Saturday night scraping them off poles on campus and among campus town streets. Freshman Michael Johnson said he and a friend removed stickers near Pennsylvania Avenue residence halls, the Illini Union, along Green Street, down First Street, Gregory Street, and Wright Street. "We probably scraped down about 150 of them," Johnson said, and other students did the same as they encountered them. There must have been an excess of 200 stickers across campus and in Champaign. Johnson, who said he's done the same with white nationalist flyers near his hometown in Indiana, said the Patriot Front is active in the Midwest and on college campuses. Watchdog groups say Patriot Front is a splinter group of Vanguard America, a self-proclaimed fascist group that supported white nationalism but disbanded after the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia last year, where one protester, Heather Heyer, was killed. Patriot Front is a white supremacist group whose members maintain that their ancestors conquered America and bequeathed it to them alone. They define themselves as American fascists or American nationalists who are focused on preserving America's identity as a European-American identity, the Anti-Defamation League website says. Johnson said he and his colleagues didn't report the flyers to UI police, but did tell several professors. First Amendment right. UI police spokesman Patrick Wade said police got an email with a photo of one of the stickers on the back of a stop sign and directed that person to the campus bias assessment reporting team. "This was the first incident of its kind this year," Wade said. "This political rhetoric tends to heat up as we get closer and closer to the election," he said. "Although some of these things may not necessarily be a crime, we do want people to report things to us so we have an awareness of the situation and we can provide any resources to people if they're feeling unsafe. As a police department, we don't regulate speech, but if it includes any kind of direct threat, that's where it starts crossing the line from speech to a crime," he said. "Certainly, even if it's just speech, we still want to know about it." UI spokeswoman Robin Kaler said the campus removes flyers and other posts when they violate the rules. "It has nothing to do with the content," she said. "People have a First Amendment right. It doesn't matter what it says. If it's in a place where it doesn't belong, it gets removed," she said. Courts have ruled that universities and other government entities can enforce time, place, and manner restrictions on speech, but not the content itself. Facilities and Services spokesman Steve Breitweiser said administrators asked that any illegal stickers be removed, and staff members, mostly painters, found about 60 across campus. The majority were on stop signs and street signs, including several near the UI Ice Arena, one adjacent to Lincoln Hall, and others at 6th and Green Streets and Goodwin Avenue and Green Street, he said. What Stickers said. It's unclear what motivated the action, though it came just before the campus commemoration of Indigenous Peoples Day on Monday. I don't think anybody has an idea who did it, Kaler said. Some of the messages weren't overtly tied to white nationalism, such as one that read, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Victory. Others were more direct. One sticker with a map of the United States read, Not Stolen, Conquered. Another urged, Reclaim America, with an Italian fascist symbol. An image of white settlers was headlined, To Ourselves and Our Posterity. And another sticker that read, Keep America American. Report any and all illegal aliens. They are criminals. Listed a number for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Johnson said some of the messages are crafted to appeal to a more mainstream audience and win over college students who may feel disenfranchised by certain campus policies. Patriot Front is an image-obsessed organization that rehabilitated the explicitly fascist agenda of Vanguard America with garish patriotism. Patriot Front focuses on theatrical rhetoric and activism that can be easily distributed as propaganda for its chapters across the country, the Southern Poverty Law Center website says. It notes that the group's manifesto says even citizens who have been in the country for centuries, such as African Americans, are not true Americans because they are not of the founding stock of our people or part of the European diaspora. And next, a piece about Yiying Zhang, Spirit and Joy. Campus honors missing scholar while accused kidnappers council gets more time to consider mental health defense. By Ben Zigderman, Urbana. Hours before a memorial garden was dedicated for Yiying Zhang, her accused kidnapper and killer attended a court hearing in Urbana, sporting a long beard and dressed in a green prison jumpsuit. It was Brent Christensen's first court appearance in Urbana since February, when his trial was pushed to April 2019 after prosecutors decided to seek the death penalty. He chatted briefly with his lawyers before listening quietly through the hour-long hearing in the mostly empty courtroom as they argued for more time to examine his mental health. Later in the day, about 100 people gathered where Ms. Zhang was last seen on surveillance footage entering a black Saturn Astra at the corner of Clark Street and Goodwin Avenue in Urbana to dedicate a memorial garden to her. At this place, around this time of the day, she got into that deadly Saturn and never came back, said Peng Yu, the deputy consul general of the Chinese consulate in Chicago. While Christensen told the FBI he let Ms. Zhang out of his car a few blocks away, prosecutors believe he kidnapped and killed her. He was arrested June 30, 2017, and faces the death penalty if convicted at his trial, which is set to start in April 2019. Yu said he hopes for a speedy trial. We call for a fair and just trial as soon as possible to bring about justice, he said. At the hearing Thursday morning, U.S. District Judge James Shadid said multiple times that he's trying to keep the trial on schedule. I don't think this is going to jeopardize the April 3rd trial date, Shadid said after granting Christensen's lawyers an extension to December 3rd to say whether they're seeking a mental health defense. That's past the original September 21st deadline, but sooner than Christensen's lawyers had been hoping for. So far, they've found two mental health experts who still need to examine Christensen and are searching for a third. They declined to say in court Thursday who the two experts are and what kind of expert the third is, and won't until they're ready to say whether they're seeking a mental health defense. The government is not entitled to information about our experts until a mental health defense is sought, said Julie Brain, one of Christensen's lawyers. While his lawyers said some defendants have obvious mental health issues, others have issues that require extensive research and examination from different types of experts to determine if there's a mental health defense. The defense has no idea if we have a mental health case, Brain said, but they strongly suspect they do. They've been banging on doors looking for the third expert and said the motion for a delay was not for lack of effort. An attorney with the prosecutors, James B. Nelson, called the motion for a delay a last-minute ambush at one point and said he didn't want the defense to be in control of the trial schedule. Meanwhile, at the dedication, the president of the Chinese Student and Scholars Association said he hopes the garden gives people joy rather than anger. I know all of us want to see justice, and that will come, Yulin Li said, but we cannot let our anger at those who took Yingying from us also take the spirit and joy of this garden from her as well. Yu echoed that, saying the garden will help ensure Ms. Zhang is always remembered. Yingying's stay here at UIUC was a very brief one, but with the dedication of this garden, she will always be remembered by us and will be a member of UIUC forever, he said. And next is a Q&A with ex-astronaut Scott Altman called Homecoming King Flying High Again by Noelle McGee Champagne. It's been quite a year for retired astronaut and University of Illinois alumnus Scott Scooter Altman. In April, the Lincoln native, who piloted two space shuttle missions and commanded two more, was inducted into the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame at a ceremony at NASA's Kennedy Space Center, attended by his wife, Jill, parents, Fred and Sharon Altman of Pekin, his three sons and their significant others, a whole bunch of folks from my company, and 10 of my neighbors from Georgetown in Washington, D.C. At 6 p.m. today, Altman, whose stellar resume also includes Navy test pilot, Operations Southern Watch veteran, and Top Gun stunt pilot, will serve as Grand Marshal of the UI Homecoming Parade. I was surprised, but also very honored, said Altman, 59, who will be flying solo for the engagement, in which he'll ride the parade route in a 1963 Chevy Impala convertible. It's a thrill to be able to get back on campus, continued Altman, who earned a bachelor's degree in aeronautical and astronautical engineering in 1981 and was presented the College of Engineering's Alumni Award for Distinguished Services in 2011. It's been a big year for me. I'm very humbled looking back on everything. Not that I'm necessarily deserving of this, but my time in Illinois was very precious to me, so I look forward to rekindling some of those memories. Earlier this week, Altman was in Alaska for his company, ASRC Federal Space and Defense, which he joined after retiring from NASA in 2010. During a layover in Anchorage, he talked to the News Gazette about his time in Illinois, hanging out with Tom Cruise, and living and working in zero gravity. First question. Six Illini have soared into space. Steve Nagel, Dale Gardner, Danville native Joe Tanner, Lee Archambault, Mike Hopkins, and you. Why do you think Illinois has put out so many astronauts? I think it's a testament to the quality of education you can get at Illinois. It stands up anywhere. I've flown with people from MIT, Columbia, Georgia Tech, but I always felt like my background at Illinois prepared me as much as any of them. Aside from academics, did your time at the university prepare you in other ways? Being a member of Sigma Chi really gave me an understanding of Navy life. A squadron is very similar in ways to a fraternity. The same thing is true for NASA. The crew is like your family. What else are you looking forward to doing on campus this weekend? I'm going to stop by and visit my old fraternity and the Sigma Chi's. I'm also going to visit the Aerospace Engineering Department. One of the professors was at the UI when I was studying there. He was a year ahead of me. We also worked together at NASA headquarters back in 2004. I actually worked for him. Now Mike Lembeck is back teaching in the Aerospace Engineering Department. Was flying jet airplanes or spacecraft a boyhood dream growing up in Pekin? I wanted to be a pilot from the time I was 3 years old. We watched an old TV show called Sky King about this guy who had a Cessna airplane and flew around and solved mysteries. He had a niece named Penny who went with him. I told my parents, when I grow up, I want to be a pilot, and if I have a daughter, I'm going to name her Penny. I had all boys. And to be honest, when I was toilet training, we had a chart. Every time I completed a successful mission, I got a gold star. When I completed the chart, I got to choose between an airplane ride and a new pair of cowboy boots, because I also liked Cowboy Sam, a character in a book series for young readers. My mom often says she wonders what would have happened if I'd picked the boots. When you were a senior in high school, you got an appointment to the U.S. Air Force Academy. How did you end up at Illinois? Growing up in Illinois, I thought I needed to join the Air Force to become a pilot. During my pre-induction physical, they said, "Altman, you're too tall to be a pilot." I'm 6'4", but my sitting height was 39.5 inches, and the maximum height was 38.5 inches. I had short legs and a long torso. I decided I wanted to work on airplanes as an engineer, so I looked for the best engineering school I could go to, and that was Illinois. Because I was an engineering student at Illinois, the Navy sent me a postcard and asked me if I was interested in nuclear power. I sent it back and said, "No, but send me some pictures of airplanes." They sent me a book on naval aviation, and in it, it listed the sitting height as up to 41 inches. I called the recruiter and joined the Navy. After one of your cruises, you were selected as Tom Cruise's aerial stunt double in Top Gun and got to perform those memorable scenes where Maverick buzzes the tower and gives the bird to the Russian MiG pilot while flying upside down over his plane. Any fun stories from the set? One story that kind of put me in my place. We were filming in the area of our squadron. Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer were going to be there. There were these girls who came up to hopefully meet Tom. So they're sitting on the couch in the ready room, which is like the squadron meeting place. There were some bachelor pilots sitting around, so I said, "Let me help you out." I went up to the girls and said, "Hey, how'd you like to meet some real Navy pilots?" They said, "Nah, we'll wait for Tom." Tom was an interesting guy. He really paid attention to the briefings, and he became so interested in flying that he became a pilot. Are you interested in seeing the sequel, Top Gun Maverick, which will be released in 2020? I definitely want to see the sequel. People keep asking me, "Are you going to be in it again?" I tell everyone the same thing. My cell phone is on. If they call, I'm ready. However, I think I'd have to be an extra in the back. They're not flying F-14s anymore, and I'm not in the Navy. You were part of NASA's Astronaut Group 15. What's the story behind your selection class's nickname, the Flying Escargot? What happened was the class before us tried to name us the Slugs because our class was delayed in reporting. I interviewed in summer of 94 while on a ship in the Persian Gulf. The call came in December 94, and my report date was March 95. They said, "You're slow. You're slugs." We decided that we were slugs, with class, and we had a Frenchman with us, so we'd be the Flying Escargot. We actually had two Frenchmen, including Jean-Luc Chrestien, the first Frenchman to fly in space. What was the feeling you got the first time you looked out the window of the space shuttle and saw Earth? It was on ascent. You launch off the pad and you're flying to space kind of upside down with the Earth underneath you. As you roll the heads up, I saw the horizon of the earth with the stars behind it. It was like, wow. Then it was like, get back to work. What was the coolest thing you saw on earth? Illinois. It was that emotional connection. On my first mission, we spent 16 days in orbit. For the first 14 days, it was cloudy, or we weren't in the right attitude to look down. Finally, on the next to the last day, we were doing a pass, and I looked at world map and saw we were coming over St. Louis. It was clear, and I could get a picture of my hometown and Champaign. Everything I knew, the people who loved me, were all right there. It was just something. Favorite space food? Shrimp cocktail. It's a little spicy, and spicy foods tend to taste good up there. Did you get to keep your orange space suit when you retired? No, they keep those. I did keep my blue NASA flight suit and a NASA flight jacket that I wore flying the T-38 around. I'll wear the blue flight suit when I do talks at school. I was thinking I'd wear a crew shirt and NASA flight jacket for the parade. Are you in high demand for presentations? I do it occasionally. The week after homecoming, I'll be giving a talk in Chicago that a fraternity brother set up. I've given talks in England, Portugal. I'm not retired yet. I still have a full-time job, so it's hard to work that in sometimes. But it's always fun getting out and talking to people and letting them know there's still a NASA and exciting things are coming. Commercial crew flights to the moon and getting ready for Mars. If Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos gave you a ticket on one of their commercial flights, would you go? I definitely would. The call I got as we hung up from this interview was from someone looking at a possible Hubble repair mission to fix the failed gyros. Now I have to convince my wife. And we'll turn now to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called More Good News on Unemployment. Unemployment rate is at its lowest mark in 49 years, and workers are bringing home larger paychecks. The good news is that the jobs market just continues to boom. The federal government's latest job report shows the national unemployment rate is 3.7%, the lowest in 49 years. When unemployment numbers get down that low, employers find themselves competing for relatively scarce workers. That's why there is more good news. The scarcity of workers is driving up wages at both the high and low ends of the employment picture. A Labor Department survey of hourly wages shows pay was up 2.8% in September compared to a year earlier. The Wall Street Journal reports that workers with less than a high school diploma saw their wages grow almost 6%, and younger workers' pay grew almost 3%. Unemployment numbers have been dropping since the end of the Great Recession in 2009. But while the end of the recession was welcome, the recovery was slow, around 2% a year. Now the economy is growing at a rate of about 3% a year. Pessimists suggest it will fall back to 2%, while optimists predict the economy will continue to expand. Time will tell, but the current expansion demonstrates one thing beyond a shadow of a doubt. Economic growth is necessary for prosperity, and encouraging growth should be at the top of the priority list, both in the U.S., but especially in Illinois. More people working means more people paying taxes. More people paying taxes means fewer tax dollars being expended on social services programs aimed at lower-income individuals and families. As a wise man once said, the best welfare program ever invented is a full-time job. Modern job statistics show that unemployment rates of 4% or less are rare. The jobless rate got as low as 2.5% in 1953. Unemployment was less than 4% for four consecutive years in the 1960s, a frothy economy that generated inflation and rising interest and ultimately led to a recession. The unemployment rate got down to 4% in 2000, just before the dot-com bubble burst on the stock market. Anyone remember stagflation, a period of both high unemployment and high inflation in the mid-1970s? President Ronald Reagan and Federal Reserve Board Chairman Paul Volcker ultimately used a high interest rate policy to stifle inflation, leading to the economic books that occurred during the Reagan administration. The point is, of course, that one good set of economic conditions, low unemployment, can lead to an unpleasant side effect, an increase in price inflation. Although events have proved they are far from clairvoyant, Federal Reserve officials are optimistic about the future. They project the unemployment rate will fall to 3.5% in 2019 and stay below 4% through 2021. They also are confident that inflation will remain subdued, although federal deficit spending and the oppressive national debt will pose a severe problem if interest rates continue to creep up. The booming economy has become a subject of considerable dispute in the face of the November 6th elections. Republicans argue the economy has been strengthened by the Trump administration policies aimed at reducing regulation, putting more money in taxpayers' pockets, and encouraging business investments. Democrats say the economy is on a temporary sugar high as a consequence of tax cuts that will increase the federal deficit. Whatever the cause, the economy remains strong. That's unadulterated good news for anyone who wants a job or is looking for a new job. And in the From Our Readers section, a piece written by John D. Colombo, Albert E. Jenner, Jr., Professor Emeritus, University of Illinois, College of Law, Savoy. Letter writer's insight is amazing. Regarding Dan Miner's letter published in the October 8th News Gazette, I am shocked, shocked, that you have discovered the true nature of all of us members of the College of Law faculty. I had hoped that my 62 years of regular church attendance, though admittedly with a coincident belief in evolution, which the last time I checked was perfectly compatible with belief in God, coupled with my classroom advocacy of the effectiveness of free markets, but properly regulated, so that entities like Lehman Brothers can't simply lie to steal from us lesser folk, would have covered my tracks. But I see that through careful sleuthing, you have identified us as the atheistic communists bent on the destruction of America that we all are. Sad. I am only surprised that you did not include with your letter photos of the satanic rituals we conduct at the college every Saturday at midnight. I should warn you, however, to never venture closer than 100 miles from the College of Law building. So far, the faculty has been unable to snatch souls for damnation from farther than a 99-mile radius of the faculty lounge. But one never knows what the future may bring. And that again was written by John D. Colombo, Albert E. Jenner, Jr., Professor Emeritus, University of Illinois, College of Law, Savoy. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, October 12, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.